weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Roz, Emmett and Gray for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, October 31st. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show with Beto da Silva at 7pm, football journalist David Snay joins us ahead of the League of Ireland finale. We'll hear from Stephen Bradley, Damien Duff and Rory Higgins just 25 hours and 41 minutes away from kickoff. But sure, who's counting? Bernard Jackman chats rugby and we'll hear from Ireland coach Simon Easterby as well as Munster interim coach Ian Costello. While Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America. Plus we'll round up the rest of today's sports news headlines. If you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Bernard Jackman is standing by to chat rugby. Before we dive deep into rugby, Bernard, there is some Gaelic Games news we have to start off the show with, because there are 5 counties represented and 14 first-time winners on the PWC Football All-Stars 2024 team, dominated by All-Ireland champions Armagh and runners-up Galway. The Orchard County lead the way with 6 players, including Footballer of the Year nominee Barry McCambridge, while runners-up Galway have 5, including their Footballer of the Year nominees Paul Conroy and John Marr. All 3 are first-time All-Stars. Ulster champions Donegal have 2 representatives, while there is 1 each for Tyrone and Louth. Craig Lennon claims the first award for the Wee County since 2010. The Red Hands Morgan is the only member of the 15 to have previously been selected. It is the first time since 2003 that neither Dublin nor Kerry have an All-Star representative. The Dubs had 4 nominees after they were dethroned by Galway in the quarterfinals, and the Kingdom 3 following their extra time loss to Armagh in the semis. The All-Star ceremony will take place tomorrow night at the RDS in Dublin, where the Footballer of the Year, Hurler of the Year and Hurling team will be named live on RTE1 and the RTE Player. Tipperary's former All-Star Conor Sweeney has retired from intercounty senior football at the age of 34. The Ballyperrine man made his championship debut against Laois in 2010 and over the next decade developed into one of the leading forwards in the country. In 2020, in the iconic green and white Bloody Sunday colours, Sweeney captained Tipperary to their first Munster senior football title since 1935 in a surprise win over Cork. His performances throughout the 2020 championship earned him an All-Star. Sweeney claimed a Munster under 21 football championship in 2010, a National Football League Division 4 title in 2014 and a Division 3 league title in 2017. Tipperary GA described him as one of the greatest ambassadors for football that the county had seen. Kerry will be without rising star Killian Burke next year after 21-year-old agreed a Category B rookie contract with AFL side Geelong. The 2-time Munster under 20 winner plays anywhere from wing back to half forward and came off the bench to good effect in the championship clashes with Derry and Armagh in the summer. The Milltown Castlemaine man will link up with fellow Kerry man Mark O'Connor and Mayo's Oisín Mullen at the AFL side.
Game On
Rugby.
Well, we are here to chat rugby. Lots of news to get through. Bernard Jackman, how are you?
Yeah, good. It's been a busy week. Even though there's no URC, obviously Munster have been a talking point all week with a shock announcement on Tuesday that Graham Rowntree was moving on. So
who needs matches?
Yeah,
still,
exactly.
Still
yeah,
plenty
yeah.
To speak about. Listen, I did hear you on the RTE Rugby podcast with Neil Tracy, and you were speaking about your, I suppose Munster should be chasing up Felix Jones, really. News today, though, we're going to hear from Ian Costello, because the recruitment process, they've hit a pause, is the quote, basically, and they haven't actually started the process until after the match at the weekend, which we will get into. Before I get your thoughts, Bernard, let's hear from Ian Costello on just that.
I'm not trying to deflect. We've given it no thought. It just, we've so much to focus on at the moment. Felix is a great guy, great coach. I know him really well, but we haven't even considered that, Neil. You know, there's any links to any coach at the moment are a complete rumour, genuinely. And I'm not trying to deflect. That process will start once we get through Saturday. And, you know, I think we'll have a lot more information. And then all we can tell you for sure is there'll be an awful lot of interest. There's people are quick to send in CVs, etc. But we've given it no consideration. When we look for a new head coach, you know, we want them to come in and add to what we're doing rather than come in and fundamentally change it. That includes our culture, which, again, we have a very, very clear identity. And so, yeah, I think it's, you know, consistency will be a very important part of that, but it'd be definitely something that we'd be looking for.
No consideration just yet for a new head coach. Are you surprised by that?
Look, I would hope someone somewhere in the organisation has started it, because
someone has a pen and a paper. Well, and they're writing down a couple of names.
Make a list anyway, you know. Look, agents will be ringing. you know, all the coaches, sorry, 99% of the coaches in the world will have an agent. The ones out of work will, their job is to be watching for opportunities like this, and this has come out of the blue. So I'd be surprised if agents haven't been making contact. You know, obviously, Ian is. Normally, he'd be the person they would ring with the new restructuring in Munster Rugby or the CEO. But this week, he has taken more of a hands-on role to lead the rugby up. So there's obviously a game on Saturday. But this is a big game, but it's not. It's a bit of a novelty as well. You would imagine, you know, Man United are going to announce a coach, I think, pretty soon. You know, it seemed like there was a contingency plan. If Munster didn't have a contingency plan, you know, you'd wonder why they didn't. You know, I would say for the players' point of view, they've obviously had a difficult start to the season. They're going to have to come out of November or come out of this block firing, and you know, getting clarity around their coaching setup is obviously something that will help get them, you would imagine. So it'd be interesting to see what happens Monday, Tuesday, and how they restructure, or if they, you know, if Ian stays on. I know he says he doesn't want the job, but does he stay on part time? Do they try Mike Prendergast being the Ruud van Nistelrooy caretaker for a little while, see how it goes? So there's a lot of questions and not many answers, and I can understand why Ian can't answer there. Obviously, he's got to deflect, but yeah, I think what does unfold would be interesting, and show it'll be a sign of the ambition that Munster have, and you know, absolutely, yeah, we don't want someone to, Munster clearly don't want someone to come in and change too much. They don't want someone who is going to not be familiar with their culture, and that's not easy either. You know, a lot of these head coaches have their own vision, and they look at Munster and they'll say, "Look, at, you know, they won a trophy 2 years ago. You know, they finished top last year, but we're poor in Europe. Maybe they need a change. You know, maybe they need a different way of playing or a different culture." So that's going to be fascinating. Felix Jones is someone I think is an obvious candidate because he's living in Ireland. He's got a huge pedigree there. He would know the culture. He would know the identity of Munster. Is a young coach. Hasn't got a head coach experience, but has all the capacity. He's worked in high pressurized environment, back to back World Cups. So I'd be shocked if he wasn't on a top wanted list. And obviously it's complicated, his relationship with England, etc. But with the RFU, he's under contract there. But
would money be the stumbling block there that Munster have?
Yeah, look, it seems as if the RFU are waiting for someone to compensate them. But again, you know, this is a prestigious province. Has produced a huge amount of players for Ireland in the past, still has current Irish internationals and future Irish internationals in that squad. So you'd imagine the RFU would give them a dig out there to make sure that the next generation and the current generation of Irish rugby players have the best possible coaching environment. So I would like to think the money wouldn't be the only criteria here, and that they would go and get the best guy.
How big of a match is this Saturday? So Peter O'Mahony returns from a hamstring injury for the sold-out clash with the New Zealand 15. And I ask about how big of a match is. I know it's an exhibition match. It's a bit of a novelty. But Keane Tracy and Mike Sherry were on the show earlier in the week, and Keane was kind of making the point and comparing it to the win over South Africa. And that somewhat galvanised the season then. So would Munster be looking at this New Zealand match in a similar form, that this can kind of turn the corner somewhat?
Munster have a massive history with touring teams. Now, this isn't a test team they're playing. They're playing an All Black 15. But absolutely, you know, the match in Porky Cueve was special. The last time they played a New Zealand representative side, you know, do you remember the four Munster players from New Zealand who did the hack back to them? Yeah. And the place, there was a special atmosphere that night. I remember being in there to see them play an Australian selection as well in the lashing rain. And it was special. It was special. And I think, you know, Munster have tradition here. So from that point of view, it is going to be special. It's an absolute opportunity. It's an all-Irish selection. Everyone, the 23 picked for Munster are Irish qualified. So some of them, unfortunately, will never get to play test match rugby, you would imagine. So this chance to play against an international selection, and the build-up and the atmosphere around it, face a Haka, is special. So, yeah, I think it's the ideal game to maybe just turn the page, to use the sporting phrase, to get Munster back on track. But there's still lots of things that are going to have to happen off the field over the next couple of weeks that the Munster can hang their hat on, and I suppose get down to the mundane of trying to win league points in a URC game.
Team news then. Peter O'Mahony, as mentioned, has heard Dermot Barron captains the Munster side. What stands out to you, Bernard, from both teams as well, actually, because as you mentioned, it's not the front line New Zealand team is an All Blacks 15 selection.
Yeah, look, there's some experience there. Finney Christie, the starting nine, is a test player. Duplessis, Kirifi is a captain, very explosive number seven. Sean Stevenson has got massive X factor. He's an All Black as well. So it's a nice team. There's some young talent there. You know, when you see the All Black team that's playing England the following day, it's chalk and cheese, you know. Mm. But that's to be expected. From a Munster point of view, I think O'Mahony playing, obviously he got injured in round three against the Ospreys, did his hamstring. The Irish squad are down in Portugal doing some warm weather training, and Andy Farrell made the decision to leave him here to get this game time. So this is a huge opportunity for him to put his hand up to maybe play against New Zealand next week. Obviously, he's got a massive history with New Zealand.
Mm. Could he be thrown straight in?
Look, he's a big game player. Yeah, it's unlikely, but he certainly could be part of the match 23. So he'll be looking for a good outing there. The likes of Hodnuth, Coombs, Ahern, like these are talented young forwards. Barron being captain is a big call. Obviously, there's been question marks around Ty Burns' captaincy of Munster. Will the new coach maybe make a change there and have someone who's more likely to be there for all games? And then Dermot Kilgallen, summer signing from Connacht, had a hamstring injury, played some club rugby last week, and he gets a start in the wing. And I know Munster are really excited about what he can add to it. And probably Billy Burns for different reasons. Billy Burns, you know, got an injury early doors, high profile recruit from Munster. Didn't have the best game at the weekend against the Sharks. So is this a game where he just kind of shows that Munster crowd, the Munster coaches, you know, what he can bring? No, it should be a great night down there, and hopefully Munster can really find that emotional performance that maybe they've been missing over the last three or four weeks by and large.
Okay, should be, hopefully it will be a cracker as well. Just to mention, scrum half Paddy Patterson, who is in line for his first appearance since New Year's Day as he returns from a long-term knee injury. So it is good to see that these long-term injuries that Munster have had to contend with, there are some players filtering back through. You mentioned Ireland there, Bernard. We can hear from Simon Easterby on New Zealand and indeed the tests ahead.
Yeah, it's brilliant. We get the chance to play against teams from the Southern Hemisphere, and obviously there is that little bit of rivalry between ourselves and New Zealand over the last couple of years. You know, they got one over us the last time we met them, obviously, in Paris. And you know, I think they've had a change in coaching setup. There's a number of individuals that have come into their group that will be different from what we've experienced before. So yeah, there is a little bit of difference. They've lost a few senior players over that period as well. You know, we're trying to progress and keep evolving as a team as well. So yeah, it's a nice kind of storyline. They've come off the back of the Japan game. They've got to play England this weekend. It's our first game for a good while. So yeah, there's lots of sort of subplots to the game, but essentially we're playing against New Zealand in the Aviva on a Friday night, and we want to make sure we hit the ground running, and you know, the history behind that will probably be something that you guys will talk about a little bit more.
Certainly love live sport of a Friday night. Bernard, in terms of team news and Simon Easterby there, Ronan Keller is on course to be fit for Ireland's match on Friday week. Dan Sheehan, of course, out until the new year, and Rob Herring yet to play for Ulster this season. Additionally, Leinster's Kieran Frawley and Connacht's Mac Hansen, who both missed the last round of URC games, are expected to be fit. So there's a bit of positivity emanating around this Irish team.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, down in Portugal, they love going to camp with Andy Farrell. The calendar this November, I mean, you've got four amazing games. Mm. You know, Australia have shown glimpses of being on the right track. They've got some players back who weren't available for them in the Rugby Championship who are playing in Japan. They'll be strong. Joe Schmidt, you know, we saw the influence he had in New Zealand since, you know, in that World Cup game, the way Ireland, he picked apart Ireland from a first phase set piece play, the variety of their kicking game against us, which causes all kinds of trouble. So, you know, he can do that now with Australia. There's some new laws being trialled, which could change up the game. The aerial contests are being, I suppose, favoured again. So there's more teams, likelihood of more kicking, but contestable kicks, and that can create some transitional play and create some exciting rugby against organised defences. So, Ireland squad, I think Farrell has the squad in a good place. you know, the vast majority of his main players are available. They've all shown glimpses of form in their provincial jerseys, but as I said, they seem to just gel incredibly quickly under his watch. It's his last stint before he goes on sabbatical for the Lions tour. You know, you've Johnny Sexton back in part time. How are the tens going to develop? Which one is going to be the main player? Obviously, Jack Crowley has the jersey, but Frawley's, you know, has had some good. He obviously had a big impact off in South Africa, and then he's had some positive moments for Leinster. Sam Prendergast has got a lot of momentum behind him. Like, there's just a lot of questions. The fact that Kelleher and Herring look like they're fit, that's a huge boost. Doris being a captain. So there's like not just good fixtures, but a lot of things within the Irish squad that are a little bit new that we obviously want to see how they play out.
Lots of narratives to explore over the next couple of weeks, and we will be previewing that New Zealand match in detail next week. I do want to get your thoughts on England, New Zealand this weekend. But before I do, Bernard, just you mentioned the Irish squad are in Portugal at the moment, and Michael Glennon has a story on the RT Sport website. The Irish rugby squad were given an inspirational speech by Nando Parrado, one of the Uruguayan rugby players who survived the 1972 plane crash portrayed in the movie Alive. As part of their preparation, Parrado, one of the members of the Old Christians Rugby Club who were on their way to Chile for a rugby tour, spoke to the squad about his experience. 29 of 45 people on board, including Parrado's mother and sister, died in or after the accident. In order to stay alive, the survivors had to eat the flesh of the deceased. An incredible story, an incredible movie as well, actually. I encourage anyone to see the film Alive. But these inspirational speeches, is this the brainchild of Andy Farrell?
No, it's been going on back a long time. I remember even under Declan Kidney in 2009, Paurie Carrington came into us in Enfield and spoke to us about his mindset and how, you know, he had got over. I think he'd been second 22 times in pro events, yeah, and then to win his first major. Marvin Hagler has been brought in, Roy Keane, Henry Shefflin. Yeah, I think it's been a big part of it. Just getting people from outside. I heard a lady speak, Nuala Moore. She's an open sea swimmer. I think she swam from Russia to America or something, like something crazy on Friday, yeah, and she'd been into the Irish squad. So
no
way. It's very diverse. Yeah, Mick Kearney, the team manager, that's one of his roles, is to find people who are who can just, I suppose, make the players think about their own mindset, high performance, teamwork, bravery, mental resilience. It's a big part of being the Irish squad, and you know, you get excited by these inspirational people who come into camp and give you some of their wisdom and tell you a story. So it's that's obviously a bit left field, but even Ferguson, I remember, I'm a United fan obviously, but Alex Ferguson was telling the players a story about, remember the Chilean miners?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
They went in to play a big game, and there was two of them sitting in the dressing room pre-match that he's flown in to kind of add their side of it, you know. So it's not uncommon in sporting environments. But yeah,
what's the most inspirational speech you got when you were?
Harrington was amazing. So we went on to win a Grand Slam. It was only our second ever Grand Slam that year, and he spoke about, you know, how he'd kind of admired or was in awe of the likes of Tiger Woods, and he used to basically tell his coach to clip if you saw Tiger Woods having an amazing drive or chip and putt, and basically he had a highlights video of Tiger Woods on his phone, and he'd watch it on planes or buses or not many buses but in cars.
He's a man of the people.
And effectively then, when he was playing Tiger Woods on a Sunday, he was kind of putting massive pressure on him because he built Tiger Woods up to be superhuman, and he's saying, oh, we're level going into the last day. Tiger Woods will probably hit a 65 here. I better hit a 64. And he ended up hitting a 74, and Tiger Woods could hit a 73 and win. So he ended up flipping around and actually clipping Tiger Woods' errors. You know, I made a lowlights video instead of a highlights video, and just to make say, look, the reason Tiger Woods is the best is because he doesn't let a bad shot affect him. You know, and that was part of one of the little things that he did. And probably we at the time, we over hyped other opposition teams, you know what I mean? And Kidney's point and Harry's point was, look, we have enough resources ourselves to be able to go out and do something special. So that was the most immediate impact. That was Enfield at Christmas, and whatever, 3 or 4 months later we had a Grand Slam. So very interesting guy, and that was just one of the ones I remember. But as I said, like, there's been a variety, and that's the key, variety, not just sports people, people from other walks of life who can come in and tell their story.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Let's just wrap up our rugby conversation just to pick at the test matches this weekend, England and New Zealand. Sorry, I think it was Matt Williams maybe. Right? Should we just refer to New Zealand as New Zealand? They're not the All Blacks. Let's strip it all back. Let's stop making them this big superhuman enigma.
Look, they were an All...
Joe Marler, I know, isn't a fan of the hacker.
Yeah, look at this. I don't... Use Joe Marler for my reference of what I can call people or whatever. But look, I like the hacker. There's going to be kids and adults in the Viva Stadium next Friday night, and that is going to be part of the thing they remember. The All Blacks, look at if you look through history, they've deserved the right to be called the All Blacks, as far as I'm concerned. England All Blacks is going to be a massive game. England should have beaten them, could have beaten them twice over the summer. They definitely left at least one win behind. England, for me, are the team that Ireland need to keep an eye on. I know there's been coaching departures, etc., but they have some serious young players coming through. They've got some serious athletes, as we saw in Twickenham last year. So if they can, I suppose, recover from Felix Jones leaving and continue to build that game model they're trying to build, they should be able to beat the All Blacks.
Okay, lots to look forward to. Bernard, thank you very much for your time. Great chatting, as always. We're taking a short break, then we're turning our attention to association football in the company of David Snaid of the 42.ie.
Game on.
Football.
Now, I am delighted to say that David Snaid of the 42.ie joins us on the line because, David, we are just over, what is it now, 24, 25 hours away from kick-off in the League of Ireland finale. Are you excited?
I'm buzzing. I'm surprised you haven't got it down to the absolute minute of when kickoff is.
Well, I did at the start of the show. Now, my maths, I can't count backwards here. So it was 25 hours and 42 minutes at the start of the show. So I'd say it's about 20 odd now.
Shane, you know yourself, the only maths you need to worry about is Shelburne getting 3 points to win the league. That's all you need to worry about.
Well, it is in Shelburne's hands, but Shamrock Rovers are favourites to get 5 in a row. Which is, it's funny here that it is, everyone is speaking about, and at times on Game On here, we are talking about Shelburne's first title in 18 years, 12 of which they were spent languishing in the first division, and Damien Duff's impact and all of those narratives. And somehow Shamrock Rovers 5 in a row, an unbelievable achievement if they were to pull it off, an unprecedented 5 in a row, has somewhat gone under the carpet lately.
Well, and you know what? The reason for that is obvious, just because of how the season has gone for Rovers. Do you know, like if this had been the Rovers of previous years where they've been consistent and been like their football has been coming to the fore as Stephen Bradley has developed it, like that's what people will be talking about. It's because they've only gotten back into the mix because of Shelburne going on that poor run over the last few months, because of Derry City doing the same and obviously now dropping out of contention. That's why they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit, and now people are beginning to realise, well, hold on, like Jamie Mack here, Stephen Bradley is on the cusp of, he's already become the first manager to win 4 league titles in a row with the same club. He did that last season. Like, he doesn't turn 40 until later on this year, and now he's on the brink potentially of winning a 5th league title in a row at the age of 39. Like, yeah, I've said this previously and written this previously, in terms of his own story and what he's been through in his own career going over to Arsenal as a kid, what he went through there with when he obviously got attacked, and people who might not know the backstory of it is well worth reading up on, especially if maybe we're talking about in the age of a general election, you know, the floating voter. There's people there wanting to know a little bit more about some of the personalities in the League of Ireland. Like, Stephen Bradley's story is one that I think a lot of people will take inspiration from, because he obviously came back to play in the League of Ireland, realised, you know what, this isn't what he actually really wants. Finished before he was 30, got on the coaching train, and has just done unbelievable things at Shamrock Rovers. When you look at where Rovers were at, was it the summer of 2016 when he took over kind of an interim charge after Pat Fennell left, and where they are then to where they are now, and yet they've had investment and they've got proper structures in place, but they've needed a man like him to actually lead it and to drive it. That's what he's done. And now this season, they haven't been great. They've obviously got into the Conference League group stages and they're flying there now, 4 points, possibly 7 next week if they beat TNS. But it's coming down to this game. One game, well, one, two games really, that's going to decide. And either way, it's just an end of a season that's just been filled with great stories.
It is. And there's another one to come tomorrow. Let's hear from the man himself. Stephen Bradley was speaking to Tony O'Donoghue earlier today.
It's the final game of the season. It's all come down to the wire. One of the most exciting climaxes to the league in years.
Yeah, it is. It's obviously exciting for everyone involved in the league to have it go down to the final game. Yeah, and we just see what happens.
Waterford presented you with a difficulty in the past. They've beaten you, in fact. How do you prepare for a game like this?
Like we normally do. Like you just said, Waterford have been a difficult opponent for us this year. They've beaten us in Tala already. Gave us a difficult game down there the last time we played them. And Waterford will come and play with a freedom. They have some really good players. Keith's teams are always well organised. So tomorrow's a difficult game, so we got to prepare as we normally do.
This year, of course, you've got, after the league, another important game to go in the Europa Conference League. So does it change the approach in any way? Like, you've got a Friday match and you've got a Thursday match?
No, there's lots of recovery. It's not like it's a Thursday-Sunday game, and there's a lot of travel involved. Both the home games, there's nearly a week in between. So no, it doesn't hurt us in any way. It's actually nice to have another big game to look forward to next week.
In terms of injuries and suspensions, Danny Mandroy went off the last day. How is he and Sean Hoare?
Sean will miss out, and we need to check on Danny today and see how he is. He obviously picked up a knock on the door, so we'll have to check on that one.
And Dan clearly missing. How are you going to resolve that issue?
Yeah, Dan's obviously suspended. He's been brilliant for us, Dan, so it'll be a miss. But we know we've got Josh, who's played there a number of times, Sean Kavanagh's played there a number of times, Marcus, Gary. We have a lot of options that can cover there.
Now, if Shelburne go up to Derry and win, there's nothing more you can do. It's done. Will you be listening during the, or being kept aware of what's going on up in Derry?
No, there's nothing we can do. We can't affect it. There's no point in bothering ourselves with that game. What will be up there. It's about us focusing on trying to be Waterford, and if we do that, we give ourselves a chance. But if we don't do that, it doesn't matter what happens elsewhere. So we just got to focus on Waterford and what's in front of us.
If you were to do it again, though, that would be five in a row. That would be unprecedented. I mean, are you thinking about the history of this and how important it could be?
Again, no, because we're in it. It's just about the next challenge, the next one. I think reflecting on what we've done and all of that, and the history comes years down the line when we're all old and retired and we can look back. But right now we're in it, we're hungry for more. Can we achieve it? Can we go and win? Tomorrow we'll see. But look, we'll keep fighting. This group always fights and we'll keep fighting.
You're glad to be back in the dugout. It was difficult for you, I'm sure, watching the games and not being able to be a part of it.
Yeah, it was difficult. But Glenn and Stephen and the staff did a brilliant job, like I knew they would. The players were excellent. But if you're asking me, would I like to be in the stand every week? No, I did miss the touchline.
Well, good luck tomorrow from your usual spot in the dugout. All you can do is do your best and win the match.
Exactly, that's all we can do. And see if it's enough. If it is, it is. If it's not, it's not.
So, David, no Dan Cleary, no Sean Hoare. Paul Jarman going for a golden boot as well. I know Keith Tracy was on the RT Soccer podcast during the week saying he loved playing the role of the villain, spoiling the party. Can Waterford spoil the party?
They can. Of course they can. They've already won there. They've got some good players. Even how they play in terms of a bit of pace and a bit of counter-attacking. They have, obviously, you mentioned there, Podge up front. He's been great since he's come back. He's obviously one of the players who's obviously been nominated as well for the PFAO Ireland Player of the Year. I don't know. Maybe, do you know what, could be going to Tala, a bit of freedom, best lovely pitch, all the rest of it. Maybe they'll go there and Rovers might be a bit nervy because of obviously everything that's on the line. But then you hear what Stephen Bradley's saying there, and it's a consistent message you hear from him in terms of what the Rovers players have been through. And that's the thing with this squad. It's a squad that's been together and through this over the last few years. It's not one that he's been going to dismantle and kind of piece back together to try and go again and kind of dominate again. This is a group of players who have been through it all together. That's what just makes you think they're going to have too much at this point for a Waterford team who, up until a few weeks ago, might have had an outside chance in Europe. That's obviously gone now. And I think it's a sellout, isn't it, as well? And yeah, Tala Stadium for tomorrow, it's good to go to 10,000 people going to be there. I fancy Rovers to win, but then I also fancy Shells to win. I think Shells will. I think Shells will go up there.
Why do you fancy that?
I was looking at it today, and the last couple, the break around the internationals came at a great time for Shelburne. They obviously, you know yourself, rotten run of form, but just even with the players themselves, little things were happening in games that are coming in, and I spoke to Paddy Barrett about this, even in a piece just for last week, and lads in the dressing room coming in at the game saying, how are we not picking up more points here? Why are we not scoring these chances? Like, stuff was beginning to happen, and I think that that break with the internationals came at a great time. And also, when you think about what happened with Derry City that time when they dropped points against Bowes and Sligo, that pretty much effectively ruled them out. Let's be honest, they just had no momentum. And I just think with Shells, Derry now as well, like, they have the cup, that'll give them that chance of winning, winning the cup and getting into Europe. There's a few bodies there up at Derry who I think need a bit of rest and need a bit of mind, and just to be maybe closer to 100% for that cup final. Throw in the situation with the pitch up there, you wonder, will a certain few players be like, you know what, it's not worth the risk? Like, it's something that's been Rory Higgins has spoken about, even himself.
Actually, sorry, David, I'll just cut across you there for one moment. We will hear from Damien Duff, but just on that, I'm just going to play a clip from Rory Higgins for our listeners, just kind of what you're detailing there, because I do want to explore that conversation with you, David.
Rory, final league game of the season and a big game to finish off with. How you fix team-wise?
Obviously, we have some injury concerns following on from last week. But in saying that, we'll still have a good enough team on the pitch to try and win a game of football.
Well, obviously, just on that subject, then, you obviously have maybe don't only think about it right now, but another game coming up next Sunday, which is equally important. You have to have an eye on that as well?
Aye, well, we won't be taking unnecessary and silly risks. I don't think that would make any sense. So, as I said, we'll still have a really good team on the pitch and a team that's capable of winning the game.
How have the boys bounced back in training after the disappointment, Ray?
No, there's no point in lying. It's human nature that it was a tough weekend, extremely tough weekend. But as the week's gone on, we've got them going again, and I've no doubt that they'll be ready come Friday.
In terms of your visitors coming here, Shelburne coming, obviously it's a huge game for them. It's been a good season for them as well.
Absolutely. They deserve an awful lot of credit over the 3 years they've built and built and built and got to this point, and such fine margins, but credit to them. We are representing this football club. We're a proud club, and we want to finish the season on a high, and it's our last home game of the season, home support, and we want to give them optimism for what's to come down the road.
And European qualification obviously still on the line as well. You have two cracks at it now.
It's crazy in a lot of ways, because a week ago we were talking about winning a league title possibly, and then a week later you're talking about trying to qualify for Europe, which shows you the nature of it and shows you how tight it is. But it is what it is. We have to be extremely professional. We have a job to do. All we can focus on is trying to win our game. Whatever happens elsewhere, we've zero control of.
Rory Higgins speaking to Lawrence Murr of Derry City. That clip courtesy of Derry City's in-house media team. David, that kind of just emphasises what you were saying there. And I know Rory's spoken about the pitch and everything, but I mean, is this not mind games? Like, if you're a Derry fan, if you're a Derry player, you don't want any team coming up to your home patch and lifting a League of Ireland trophy, one of which that you were in the running up until last week.
No, of course, listen, of course. Like, Rory Higgins mentioned there, like, the pride element, of course, will come into it. But naturally, what's also going to come into it is that professionalness as well of obviously players wanting to play, of players obviously wanting to put on a good performance. You'd almost wonder, are they better off maybe even playing just a few extra of the fringe players wanting to try and impress for the cup final as well? That could also play a part in this thing, because there are players, and this is the thing, you come to this stage of the season, there's players there who are nursing injuries, who aren't quite fit. Is it worth taking the risk with them? Now, everything that's involved with the game and what's on the line, there's another element to it that comes into it. But like, you ask me why I think Shells, I'll be honest, I've no idea. Like, you can ask, if it said to me 3 weeks ago why I think Shelbourne could be going up to the Roy McBride Brandywell and winning, I'd say they haven't a hope. The form that they were in, but the last couple of weeks have been really big for them. Like, even Derry's record, like, Derry've only lost two games up there. They've actually had the reason why they've stayed in contention for so long is because their home form has been good, but that has tapered off a little bit in the last few weeks, and as I mentioned with that especially that result against Bowes as well. And I just have a feeling that it's going to be a tight game. Like, these games, I have to even just go back even before, because obviously I'm going to be going up and covering that game. Like, they've all been draws up until the cup game, when Derry knocked Shells out. The majority of the games over the last couple of seasons have been draws between the teams.
But I don't think Shells won in the last 12 visits or something like that off the top of my head.
I know I'm saying they're going to go up there and win. Like, but like, I just have that feeling now at this stage. Like, I think you have to go back to around June time for the last time Shells even won 3 games in a row in the league, because obviously that was in the height of when they were flying. And they've won 2 in a row now. I just fancy them to go up there and with the league and they have to win. I think they have to win. Like, they might not have to, depending on what happens. But I think Rovers will do the job. But I think Shells will have enough in that group of players to go there and get a 1-0 win.
And in a weird way, it's almost, oh, I don't know if it is or not now, but in my humble opinion, if that matters much, that it's kind of a good thing that you have to win. You can't rely on that safety net of a draw and then go out a bit hesitant and say, okay, listen, we just keep it tight here, see what happens. You have to go for it. Yeah. It has to be all out war for 90 minutes. Let's hear from the Shelburne boss, Damien Duff, speaking to Tony earlier today.
Damien, it all comes down to one game after an eventful season, you might say. Were you expecting all or nothing at the beginning?
No, but listen, if you offered me this position at the beginning, I'm guessing I would have took it. So, amazing position we're in. Going down to the last day of the season, everything in our hands, Tony. So, it's been brilliant, regardless of the roller coaster ride for the likes of myself and other rival managers. It's been a roller coaster and an exhilarating ride for the neutral, and it's made the League of Ireland very relevant and very popular.
You came out of the traps like a train, really. You started the season so well. There was a dip. Like, was it because you lost important players? Was it because of injuries? Or when you review it now, how do you see it?
I think everyone's had their dips, numerous dips. Obviously, everyone gets a lot of coverage because it was recent, but we're well and truly out of it, believe me that. Outside of that, in the last few months, we've lost big players, and it was, I guess, and it sounds bizarre, we're top of the league and we're looking for our best team, our best formation, who's in form, who's not, who's best suited to this and that. So, it took us a while, but we found our feet again, not finding our feet. Like I said, in brilliant form and relishing the task tomorrow.
It's a long time since the league title came to Talca Park. What would it mean for the club?
I think it's there for everyone to see. Even being in a title race, but even over the last 3 years, where the club was at 3 years ago, cup final and then Europe, amazing nights. You can't get a ticket now for Talca Park. So for me, like it says in a lot of the banners around here, Dublin institution, massive, massive club. To have the title back here, be special, be priceless.
How has the week been in terms of training, but also in terms of the psychology of it, the players' nerves, for example?
They've been cool as ice. I think we all have, but I think the most important part of the week is tomorrow night. So it's once they're cool, calm, highly motivated, and they show a lot of quality tomorrow night, that's the most important thing. So no, we haven't treated it any different. We haven't overthought it. We've just treated it like any other game. A normal training day today, a lot of fun, a lot of seriousness, and we're ready to go.
If you don't win in Shamrock Rovers, do they become champions for the fifth year in a row? I mean, they have been an extraordinary team.
They have, but in my mind, I haven't even explored that opportunity. So when I think about the weekend and what it involves, of course, it's our performance first, but it's all about Shelburne winning the league. So, brilliant team, brilliant manager, brilliant players. They have the best of everything. But like I said, all I've planned for is for Shelburne to lift the league title tomorrow night.
You've had an extraordinary career on the field yourself, and yet this seems to mean so much to you. Why is that?
I don't know. I've put my heart and soul into it. Not that I didn't as a player. But like I said last week, I think to you, Tony, playing football was second nature to me since I was that high. I had football on my feet. So dribbling in an Irish jersey or Champions League night wasn't stress to me. It was just normal. Whereas this is totally out of the comfort zone stuff and the hardest thing I've ever done, and I don't know, I've just invested so much in it. But we win the league tomorrow night. It's not about me, it's not me lifting it, it's all about the players. They're one hell of a special group, proper boys, proper men, and guys that I'll stay in touch with for many years. So I'd be so proud of them.
25 hours, 13 seconds to kick off, David Snaid, to answer your earlier question there as I just look up at the clock. Damien Duff.
That's great, isn't it? It's great. It's brilliant. It's such a buzz. Like, we're talking there about emotion, cool as ice. Like, even in games this season where...
Do you believe that?
...covering the league now.
The cool as ice. Do you believe the cool of ice? Do you think they have the maturity and they've progressed enough that they will be able to handle the occasion?
Yeah, I think there's enough... There's enough experienced lads in that team. Few of them here have obviously won titles. Paddy Barlett, Shane Griffin is obviously in there. Sean Gannon. Sean Gannon's going for a 10th league title. Do you know what I mean?
That's mad.
You know, like, you speak to people and know him, just say anywhere relaxed, he's hard, anywhere laid back, he's horizontal. Do you know what I mean? You know, he's like, that lad doesn't get affected by like nerves or by anxiety. He looks the exact same now as he did 12 years ago when he was playing in the league. You know, he's like, some of his former teammates hate him because he's still got a baby face. And some of the players who were in that team even though he might not have won stuff, they've been experienced. Like Sean Boyle, like this season, like probably whose body has to be managed, but like minutes to goals and assists, the impact he's had and the effect he has on that team, that's what kind of plays into it. Like, he looks as fit at any point during the season, and it's the most important part. That's just some of the stuff that's feeding into my own kind of maybe belief in where I think Shells can get over the line. And I do think that they genuinely, don't get me wrong, listen, some of them will have that nerves and stuff, but it's like even what Rory Higgins said about Shelbourne, like they haven't totally come out of nowhere here. Do you know what I mean? This is Duff being building this for the last couple of years. He's got to the cup final last four season, qualified for Europe in the second, added a couple of bodies. I don't think anybody really would have said if they were going to win the league that they'd run away with it. This is what anybody would have had in mind if Shells are going to win the league, that it would be like this. But they've dealt with the likes of Gavin Malloy going to Aberdeen, Will Jarvis getting recalled for Hull. So if they've overcome that, and that's what kind of feeds into it, my own kind of belief that maybe that they could do it, you know.
I was drawn actually to a small extract from the Reds Independent fanzine that Shelburne fans and a small segment that said, such has been the haste by some to downplay the Reds' achievements this year as they stand on the cusp of immortality and the unthinkable worst champions ever. The standard has never been worse. Yeah, we get it. You hate Shelburne. Do you think the wider League of Ireland community would like a different winner of the League of Ireland this year, David?
I don't know. Like, I haven't done a straw poll. I don't know. Or maybe it's something that we can do under 42 after the season's finished. Are you happy that Shelbourne have won the league? Happy that Shelbourne have won the league? But it's like whoever wins the league deserves to win the league. And you're not getting away from that. And I think a lot of the talk around Shells, and I would have said it myself and written it myself, as especially after Europe, losing Will Jarvis, losing Gavin Malloy. Like, there was a point where you'd rock up the Shelbourne games and you could write out the team list before it's even dropped. Because Duff's even said it there himself. You knew how Shells were going to play. You knew who was going to play. There might be one change, possibly two. But then the second half of the season, it's felt as if you weren't sure what was going to happen. That's filtered in with the performances and the results. And that's what kind of led into that whole narrative of, you know, well, what's happening with Shells? And, like, you know yourself, listen, you speak to players on the record, off the record.
Yeah.
And you can kind of get a different vibe when you have a chat. Like, going back, remember after one of the games, actually Waterford, when one of the Waterford goalkeeper threw one into his net, he dropped the ball to the back post. And I'm almost certain it was Derry City. Got a result.
It was. Sam Sargent.
Like, I remember chatting to one of the Chaz lads, players coming out, and he was just like, oh, this just strikes me as something that's going to happen. And, you know, what the feeling was. And then you're thinking, all right, and then the results aren't coming. And then, as I mentioned about that interview with Paddy Barry, who he kind of went on the record with it, which was some of the similar things you're hearing from the lads off the record saying, coming into dressing rooms after games when their heads are melted, what's going on? So that all kind of feeds into, as a journalist, well, what's the void? What's going on? And that's when there's stuff happening. But then you're still getting also the same thing coming from what's happening with Damien Duff, that, you know, like the focus that's there, like some of the stuff that Damien will even say after, games, you know, about the video analysis and trying to lighten the mood by having the only superimposing Paddy Barrett's face onto Del Boy from Only Fools and Horses falling through the bar when he makes a mistake in a game. Like, stuff like that just helps maybe lighten the mood a little bit, and it can be those little percentages, but it's just like I'm going up there. It's, I know Rory Higgins has kind of slagged off some of the Dublin media for not being up there, but I do know it takes about 3 hours 9 minutes from my house to get up to the Brandywell. I'm looking forward to that journey tomorrow, and I'm just sad that the season's coming to an end, although Shamrock Rovers are still in Europe and there is a cup final.
This is true, and there'll be Man United news to report on tomorrow as well, perhaps. Ruben Amorim making a statement just when the League of Ireland matches are kicking off. So it's all happening for now. David Snaith, thank you very much. David does have a brilliant article with Paddy Barrett on the 42.ie, as well as a great actually title run in with Dundalk and Cork City. I think David actually tweeted a picture of Sean Gannon back in the Dundalk days, and he really hasn't changed much, to be fair. So we'll all be decided tomorrow, and we'll have more on that on tomorrow's show. We're taking a short break then. Our eye is on America with Jeff Shepherd.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On, as our eye is on America in the company of Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Shane. How are you, buddy?
I am very well. I'm just recovered after watching the World Series, where the Dodgers sealed their 8th World Series title. It was a bit one-sided series, but the manner in which they clinched it was fairly dramatic stuff, Shep.
Yeah, I mean, the Dodgers were down 5-0 last night. in the fifth inning and really struggling, and get a hit, you know, get their first hit of the game. And then just the wheels fell off for the Yankees. Aaron Judge misses a fly ball, a slow moving play over to third base, gets them, you know, loads the bases, a dribbler to first base. The pitcher doesn't cover. I mean, just kind of small things all added up. Next thing you know, it's 5-5, and the Dodgers take the lead, and they go on and go win the fifth game, and they win the series 4-1. You know, Shane, we talked a lot before the regular season started about the money that the Dodgers spent. They spent almost $1 billion just on Shohei Ohtani and another pitcher coming over from Japan. And, you know, they're big spenders. They've made the playoffs like the last 12 years, okay? I mean, they are in it to win it. And there was a major gambling scandal involving Ohtani and his translator during the middle of the season. And they still, you know, kind of are able to fight through all this different stuff and all kinds of injuries. And, you know, this is their second title since 2020, and they're not going anywhere. I mean, they're going to be the best team in baseball, you know, moving forward. And this might be something we get used to watching here every October or early November.
Well, here's hoping there's more cracking baseball matches to look forward to. Listen, there was a cracking Hail Mary, actually, in the NFL. And before I get your thoughts, Shep, we actually have the radio commentary of it, which is just absolutely brilliant.
They bring three. Daniel's backing up. He's just going to have to let one fly. Goes to the right side. Steps away from the defenders. Gives himself some time. Now steps up, fires. Heads towards the end zone. It is...
I absolutely love it. Put some context on this for a chef.
All right. So, first off, I mean, doesn't that just bring joy to your heart listening to those guys just absolutely so lose good. Their minds? I mean, so yeah. So look, I mean, the Bears had, you know, done a nice job to come back and, you know, take a lead, and, you know, Jaden Daniels just kind of skates around. I mean, he keeps the play alive. He runs to the right side of the field, cuts back to the left side of the field. He throws the ball about 65 yards ballpark in the air. And, you know, the first rule of defending a Hail Mary is you got to knock the ball down. And the Bears didn't do that. They knocked the ball up, and it just kind of went over this one pile of players. And there was a Redskins receiver, Noah Brown, just standing in the end zone. He just catches the ball kind of nonchalantly. And that was the ball game. So there was a Bears defensive player who was kind of whooping it up with the crowd before the ball was snapped. And he was actually supposed to be covering Brown in the end zone. He wasn't there in time. And the end result was, you know, a win for the Commanders. They're now 6-2. I mean, they're, you know, edging ever so close to clinching a playoff spot here, you know, maybe even before week 10 or 11 of the season, which I don't think anybody had on their bingo cards before the season, Shane. Jaden Daniels, all now a virtual lock for Rookie of the Year. Dan Quinn, basically a lock for Coach of the Year. I mean, it's just an incredible season what's going on with the Washington Commanders.
It is absolutely wild. Listen, Shep, before I let you go, talk to me about probably what is the game of the week, NFC North showdown between Detroit and Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, look, you've got the Lions who've started to kind of get their offense rolling and starting to look more and more like the team, you know, that almost made it to the Super Bowl last year. And Green Bay, miraculously, he's got 6 wins, and Jordan Love's not won all 6 of those games. He's been injured. You know, Malik Willis has won 3 of those games. Jordan Love says he's going to play this week. He's not really practiced much, just been riding a bike. He injured a groin muscle last week. This game's at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. I mean, look, this is for, you know, pole position in the NFC North. This has got, you know, huge playoff implications coming down the line. I mean, look, Detroit plays most of their games this season indoors in a dome. But this, the winner, you know, if Green Bay wins this football game, you may wind up having to go through the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field in December and January to make it to the Super Bowl. And no one wants to have to do that. So, I mean, this is a critical football game that you could have at the first weekend of November.
Lots to look forward to, including hopefully the Jets snapping the losing streak against the Texans tonight. Jeff Shepherd, great chatting as always. Massive thanks to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show. That is all we have time for. Bennett Da Silva is up next with a new music show after we take a short ad break and check in on the news desk. For me, Shane Dawson, and all of the Game On team, have a very happy Halloween. It's bye for now.